Live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. I'm John Ray, and we are coming to you from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank in Alpharetta. We've got two great guests, James Daniel with the advisory firm and Jeff Armacost, and he's with Whole Brain. Before we get to James and Jeff respectively, I just want to remind you folks that we are in the Renaissance Bank in beautiful Alpharetta, and today you're connected more than ever. Whether it's your friends, your family, or your life, Renaissance understands how you bank, offering the mobile banking services that you need. Renaissance also knows that sometimes you need to speak to real people with real answers, and that's why Renaissance has more than 190 convenient locations throughout the South ready to serve you. For more information, go to renaissancebank.com, Renaissance Bank, understanding you, member FDIC. Now we turn to James Daniel. James is the owner of the advisory firm. James, welcome.
Thank you, John. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. So tell us about you and the advisory firm. How do you help folks?
So I am a fee-only financial planner. And what that really means is I help folks build financial strategies for their life. So if they're, you know, getting towards retirement or really at any juncture in life, and they just really want someone to look over their financial situation, help them take inventory or take stock of where they are, and help them build a plan to accomplish that financial goal, that's what I do.
We were talking about this before we came on the air about the difference in a financial advisor and a financial planner. I think a lot of folks maybe don't know there is a difference.
Yeah, the industry, by and large, has developed over the last few decades. You know, in financial services, we all think back to the old stock picking days where you had a broker that would call you up with stock picks. And that sort of morphed into financial advisory roles where you had an advisor who would put you in a portfolio of mutual funds, maybe help you with some insurance needs. And the industry has progressed now to a point where people are looking for more of a strategy. They're looking less to be sold a product and more for someone to help them develop those financial strategies to help them accomplish the, you know, the goal that they're trying to achieve. And that's where we are in the industry today is you hear more and more about financial planners really helping folks with their goals.
Yeah, as you say, buying a stock is a small tactic in a bigger strategy, right? I mean, that's just one little piece of a big strategy that you really help put together the ladder.
That is correct, because a lot of times folks, you know, might be investing or have used a money manager in the past, but they're really not sure if they're doing the right things. You know, how am I going to retire at 62 or 65? How am I going to get my kids through college? Am I doing the right thing so when I wake up 10 years from now that I am on track?
James, you're an engineer by background. So how did an engineer get to be a financial planner? Tell us about your journey.
Well, you know, I guess I am a bit anal. I am an engineer that has gotten into financial services. And, you know, it's I guess the two occupations do overlap in that, you know, they're both analytical. So an engineer, obviously, we're designing things, we're managing projects. And I was doing that for a number of years, and I sort of grew disenchanted with the field I was in. And along the way, I started trading stocks on my own. You know, that was back in the 90s during the birth of day trading. You know, I sort of got caught the bug, and I became a professional trader. So I quit my job. One day I just told my wife, I'm done. Went to a day trading office in Atlanta and started trading stocks full time and, you know, sort of learned the hard way, you know, how to make money in the markets, and did that for about 4 years. And then, you know, folks started asking me for help, and I decided, all right, maybe it's time for me to switch gears and actually become a professional in financial services. So I went to work for a full service broker dealer and did that for a few years, and then decided in the beginning of 2006 that I was going to strike out on my own and become a, you know, open up a fee-only planning and investment management shop, and I did that right here in Alpharetta.
That's quite a change, or a dichotomy, maybe is the way to say it, between a day trader and someone that puts together an entire financial plan, right? So that was quite a journey in and of itself.
It was. I guess I caught the investing bug, and that was the first thing. And I really just wanted to see how the markets operated and get involved in that. But I think what I missed while I was doing that was I was trading in an office with a bank of computers with other traders, and I missed the interaction with individuals, and I also missed the opportunity to solve problems. And that's what I did as an engineer. And you know, so financial planning was a natural fit for me, where I just now I can look at every client case and say, here's where we are with their finances, here's what they're trying to accomplish, and here's the tools we have to work with. So let's take a step back and build that strategy and figure out how we're going to get from point A to point B.
Makes sense. James Daniel is with us. He is the owner, and he's a financial planner of the advisory firm. James, I'm curious about what you see some of the biggest mistakes that you see folks come in with that you take on as clients. I mean, what are some of the mistakes that you see that our listeners should avoid?
I don't know that I would say it's any one big mistake. I think it's more just questions. People reach a certain point in their life and there's so much going on that they're scratching their head and saying, well, I'm doing my 401k at work. I've contributed my kids 529 for their college. You know, what else do I need to do? You know, is that enough? Is that going to get me to the point where I can retire comfortably at a certain age? And I think that's the point in time where folks think, you know, maybe I need the help of a financial planner, an outside, unbiased, objective third party to sort of take a look at our financial situation and let us know, are we doing the right things? And I think that's the biggest aha moment for anyone that comes in is they just want to see it on paper, you know?
Right.
They've been wondering, and now they're thinking, hey, I can sort of see that retirement. It's not that far off. And am I doing the right things? Am I going to be able to get there? What do I need? Do I need $1 million? Do I need $4 million? What's that, you know, magic number that I need to get to? And a lot of times I think I'm able to put their mind at ease that, you know, it's not a dire situation. You know, you're tracking well. Let me show you on paper how things are moving forward, and maybe with a few tweaks here and there and some recommendations, we can actually put you in a better situation as you look back in time.
Now, you've got what I think is a unique blend here. You incorporate tax prep and financial planning into your practice. Is that unique? And if so, why do you do it that way?
So when I started the practice, it was primarily financial planning services and investment management for clients that needed help with their portfolios. And after a number of years, what I found working with those individuals is we had such a tight working relationship, and I understood a lot about what was going on with them. And I felt like there was a disconnect with where they were getting their taxes prepared and the information I had on the client. And so I became an enrolled agent, took all the classes for that, and started doing tax returns for my clients. And I think it just became a good value add in that I understood their financial position, understood what their investments were doing, and we could tailor their financial plan and their investments to be the most tax efficient as possible.
But to work with somebody, let's be clear, to work with somebody, you don't need to prepare their taxes if they're happy with their current CPA. If they want to come to you for financial planning, you're happy to help them.
Absolutely. So in my practice, I do three things, the planning, the investments, and the tax, and I do it a la carte. I tell clients, you pick and choose, and that's how we'll work together.
Sounds great. Now, speaking of taxes, obviously, lots of changes in 2018. What's changed, and what do folks need to pay attention to? We've already gone through one tax year cycle with those changes, but what do you think folks may have missed along the way?
Well, 2018 was a big year, and I think a lot of people probably got a little bit of a surprise. I think the biggest surprise was a lot of employers underwithheld on payroll taxes throughout the year and income tax withholding, excuse me. A lot of clients were surprised that they owed a little bit. But going forward, I think now that that's been shifted with payroll with employers, the big things are we have a higher standard deduction now. And, you know, along the for folks that had itemized in the past, you know, it made sense. Hey, if you borrowed money and had a mortgage, you know, you could deduct that interest on there, and you could deduct, you know, all your state and property taxes and your charitable deductions. And a lot of folks itemized. But fast forward into the 2018 new tax laws, and less people are itemizing now. You've got this standard deduction. You've got a cap on your state and property taxes that you can deduct. And, you know, for a lot of folks, that's the biggest change. So everyone's looking for the tax savings. You know, what can I do since I'm capped on my itemization as far as tax savings? What can I do? So then we just say, you know, are we doing all we can in the 401k? Are you taking part in an HSA, a healthcare savings account? Are you maxing that out as well? By and large, I mean, that's sort of it. There's not a lot you can do as a W-2 employee. But it's just looking over those things in addition to making sure that any investment income or portfolio income that you're spinning off is very efficient on that side so that it's not adding to your tax burden.
Let's talk about that financial plan that you put together for your clients. I think maybe some people think only wealthy people put together big financial plans.
Right. I think that was misperception for a number of years in the industry, and hopefully it's being communicated with a lot of the CFP television commercials and information that's being put out there. But financial planning's for folks of all walks of life. I tell clients right off the bat, I don't have a minimum. I don't care what you come in the door with. As long as you have questions and goals you're trying to accomplish, and you see some value in hiring an objective third party and helping you map out a game plan to get to that goal, then it's going to be a great relationship and a great experience for the individual.
How does somebody engage with you, James? They come to you and say, hey, I want something a little more comprehensive than what I've had in the past. How do you start that process?
Well, you know, generally the calls I get will be from someone that has either been doing it themselves and, you know, sort of a self-directed investor, or maybe working with someone in financial services industry. But it's strictly been, hey, it's investments. And they get to a point where they got some questions and they start thinking about those things such as retirement or college, or do I have enough life insurance, or is my estate plan correct? And, you know, they start Googling out there on the internet, and they find a financial planner. So I'm what you call a fee-only fiduciary, and, you know, I tell folks right up front, I don't sell anything. I'm in this business to work more like a consultant and provide you answers and ammunition where you can run with it yourself, or I can help you implement strategies. But, you know, by and large, I'll get that phone call, or they'll reach out to me over the internet, and we'll have a introductory meeting where I learn more about their situation, explain what the financial planning process is like, how I work with folks, and we just see if it's a good fit. You know, I'm not pushy. I don't try to upsell folks. I want to see that there's some genuine questions or that they have that I can, where I can add value before I take someone on as a client.
Why don't you define fiduciary for folks that do not know what that means? What does that mean?
So that's become a hot topic over the past year, I guess, is and more folks are hearing that term. But it is a confusing terminology, and especially in financial services, financial services can cover everything from, you know, somebody selling you insurance to managing your portfolio. But at the end of the day, a fiduciary is someone that is required to put the client's best interest first. And what that means is I've got to maintain objectivity. So if I was selling a product, then the client says, well, is that the best product for me, or is that the best product for you and your commission? So the way a fiduciary takes out that out of the equation is to simply say, I don't sell anything. I can't work on commission. I strictly work on a fee basis for the client. And that way it puts your interests ahead of mine. And so you know that I'm being objective when answering your questions. Now, you know, I'll say that with a disclaimer. It doesn't mean that, you know, all advisors are perfect. There's been, you know, black eyes across the financial services industry, whether you're on the commission side or the fee only side. So, but I think it's helping to establish, you know, a standard so that consumers can know, you know, hey, this guy's going to give me honest advice, and, you know, I don't have to fear that there's an ulterior motive.
Well, and that's important, but you also said something there that's important too for people to remember is it's also about personal fit. I mean, you talked about that, and because that when the markets go up and down, it's important to have somebody that you've got a good rapport with so you can get your questions answered, right?
Absolutely. And I think more and more clients are looking for that connection. They're looking for someone that they can trust. They need to know if you give them information that they can trust you implicitly, and it's not where they have to go home and they scratch their head and question, well, I just didn't get a good feeling on that. So that's you know, really the reason I set up my practice the way I did was just to keep everything, keep those relationships there. That trust level has to be always there with clients, and keep the open communication. I'm big about communicating with clients.
James, this has been great. Thanks for being with us. James Daniel is the owner of the advisory firm. Before I let you go, though, for folks that would like more information, would like to be in touch with you, tell them how to do that.
Yeah, you can find me on the web. It's alpharettafinancialplanner.com, or that's one of my websites. And the other for the business is theadvisoryfirm.net.
Awesome. James Daniel, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, John.
Folks, if you need help with some other headaches that involve like administrative tasks or bookkeeping, maybe marketing, social media presentations, well, I've got an answer for you. Go engage a smart and reliable Office Angel. They're not a temp agency or a placement firm. Office Angels matches your business support needs with angels who have the talent and experience necessary to help you maintain and grow your business on an ongoing or as needed basis. Your terms, your timeline. They lend a hand when needed and fly off when the job is done. Find out more at officeangels.us or call Chief Executive Angel S.E. Escobedo at 770-442-9246. Now we turn to Jeff Armacost. Jeff is with Whole Brain, and he's the Chief Brand Guy. I like that. Jeff.
That's me.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us about Whole Brain and what you do there.
We help all kinds of businesses, organizations of all sizes, be the brand that stands out.
That's awesome. Now tell folks, I guess maybe let's talk about what branding is, because that term gets thrown around, and maybe we need a refresh on what we should be listening for when we hear that term.
Yeah, branding doesn't have very good branding.
I think you're right.
For so many folks, that, you know, it's reduced to, you know, your logo.
Right.
You know, create a great logo and we're done. You know, that's our brand right there.
And get on Fiverr to do that, right?
Exactly. Yeah, right. But, you know, it really is, it's a process. I like to say branding is understanding. And, you know, a good story about that, worked with a client a while ago, the top Montessori school in Atlanta. And, you know, branding needs to speak to a company or organization's big pain points. And I work with the director and key faculty. And one of the teachers in our upfront, you know, kickoff meetings said in this, you know, frustrated, you know, pleading, you know, articulation, we're so great. How come people don't know about it? And that's really what branding helps. That's the problem branding helps to solve, is that disconnect, that dissonance between the internal reality of your company or organization, big or small. You know that you do awesome work, deliver value, you know, provide a great product or service, and your customers that directly experience that know it, but not enough other people know it. So there's a disconnect. I work with the CEOs or executives, and they have this vision, you know, of their company and brand, and it's just like, why doesn't the world see it the way I do yet?
And why is that? I mean, is that because folks get into business and they really don't spend a lot of time branding from the very beginning?
Well, you know, again, if you look at the real broad definition of branding, you know, it's the doing of the brand. So there's a lot of companies that do a great job developing their brand. It's just that, you know, it's the personal, it's the people brand, you know, delivering their service or product and creating that great value or experience to a customer and even creating word of mouth, you know, it gets around.
Sure.
But there's a limit, there's an inherent limitation in that, that only, you know, only so many people, you know, are your customers and only so many people talk. So that's the you know, the chasm, you know, the barrier that arises with a company that's got a big vision is like, how do we get to this next level? And branding can really help with that.
You know, you nudged me in a nice way. So thank you for that. Because I think the point you just made is that, whether you know your branding or not, you're branding yourself, whether you're doing it intentionally or unintentionally, right?
You're always branding. If you're at, you know, at your job doing good work, you're branding. It's just that it's a one-to-one with that customer. Branding is power. Branding is creating extra touch points beyond the personal, beyond the word of mouth.
So give us some keys to outstanding branding. Tell us all your secrets about that. We've got all the time in the world.
Sure. You know, the key thing is it's a process like anything else.
Sure.
Like financial planning, like operations in a business, you know, talent, you know, acquisition, whatever. There's not any one thing. I like to, you know, I've actually kind of, you know, distilled it down to fundamentals. There's a great book that if you're a golfer, you might know about Ben Hogan's book, The Five Fundamentals of Golf. You know, so you go through all the fads and the new drivers, and sometimes it's like, get back to the basics, you know. You know, for that, it's, you know, your address, your grip, your backswing, your release, your follow-through. So in branding, I've gotten it down to, you know, a nice five fundamentals of branding that helps to understand it. And that is, number one, nail your big idea. And that's not something that a lot of smaller companies have gone through the process of doing, but a lot of smaller companies actually have that. And your big idea is, it's that one organizing idea of your brand that all the behaviors, all communication is aligned around, and your strategy is aligned around that. And I'll talk more about that. Number two, make your ID stick. Have a sticky brand idea, and that ID, identity. That's typically kind of understood as your name and your logo. It also might be, you know, other aesthetics of your brand, like, you know, a color like brown for UPS. But there's so much noise and out there, everything's so crowded and commoditized, and that having a sticky, you know, an identity, a name or a logo or a cause or something that helps people to download your brand in their mind and have it there for recall and retention is key. Number three is craft a great story. And that doesn't mean, you know, write a book per se. It just means, it's commonly understood as, you know, have a great value proposition or unique sales proposition. But it's more than that. It's, you know, how I make my customer the hero, how I make them feel, you know, the outcome. And you know, either it answers the question of what's in it for me, you know, for the customer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that means, you know, either make them the hero. If it's a, you know, if it's a product that they need, you know, a problem they have, make them the hero in solving that problem. If it's a product they want, you know, like the iPhone 10 years ago, delight them, you know, make them delighted about how amazing or awesome or gorgeous or easy this product or service is.
Sure.
And then number four is, and this is often overlooked, but present an inviting offering. There's a lot of times when, you know, we as consumers like what a company's about, especially this, you know, comes into play for B2B with, you know, or complex sales or, you know, software. I don't understand how I buy something from them, you know, and all it takes is a split second, you know, for someone to kind of get a question in their head that, you know, makes them bounce off a website or just, go to someone else. So present an inviting, organized, intuitive, logical offering. And last is, you know, look like a leader.
Sure.
And that doesn't mean look like a big company, you know, because big companies are trying to look small these days. It just means look, answer the question of, do I trust these guys? So look, you know, make sure that, you know, you look professional and well-designed, but also have the, you know, leaders have the courage to keep it simple, to not say too much. Leaders have the courage to be themselves, to speak, to let their personality flow through. So those are the five fundamentals. I've put some, you know, content together about that helps to kind of simplify the understanding of the system of branding.
Sure. We're speaking with Jeff Armacost, and Jeff is the chief brand guy at Whole Brain. Jeff, what I think maybe some folks listen to this and think, wow, that's a little bit over my head. I'm not sure I'm doing outstanding branding. Talk to them.
The other, you know, the key advice is keep it simple. Bite-size your branding. You know, there are fundamentals to it, but you don't have to tackle it all at once, just like anything else. You know, it's a process. So bite-size your branding. Pay attention to, you know, what, take a look at your, you know, your name and your logo and decide, is that, am I proud, you know, to have that logo on my trucks or on my business card? Does my name stand out or is it kind of invisible? And that, if the answer is, you know, that I don't have the greatest name, that doesn't mean I need to change my name. It just means I've got to look at the system of my brand and realize I need to make sure that people can remember me easily. So that could mean, you know, come up with a nice little tagline or name your approach, name your cause, you know, have a provocative tagline. I can't say this on the radio per se with the FCC kind of thing. But
well, we're not FCC regulated, so let it fly.
There's a new franchise out of Savannah. I went to a meeting of an exit strategy group and to be honest, I can't remember the name.
Yeah.
Of the company, but it's a South African sandwich company, and their tagline has the word, you know, SHIT in it, you know.
Okay.
So it's good.
That's their tagline.
Yeah, good as shit, you know.
So, uh-huh.
It's ballsy. It's
wow.
It's provocative.
It's so provocative. You can't remember the name of the sandwich place,
I
right?
If I Google that tagline, I'll find it.
You'll find it. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So branding is, it sounds like what you're saying to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that branding is more than a logo. It's more than a tagline. It's more than, your colors. It's really a combination of how all these things work together.
Right. And it, you know, what's the takeaway of any one customer, you know, you know, again, it could be, you know, UPS is brown, you know,
but, sure.
Your name and your logo is really important for that.
Oh, sure. Sure. Talk about the kind of clients you work with.
All different kinds. We really don't focus on any one industry. It's all, you know, the folks that, you know, want to kind of get to the next level. Work with a lot of small businesses and a lot of B2B because, you know, in B2B we're selling the invisible. And so branding helps to make it tangible and concrete. You know, we've worked with back in the 90s and in the 2000s, a lot of technology companies, startups, you know, more recently education. We'll work with Kennesaw State and Georgia Tech. And we helped to name the chemistry curriculum, a new undergrad curriculum for Emory University.
Oh, really?
That was a real fun project.
Wow. So, and I know you work with, on the B2B front, you work with all the way down to solopreneurs, right?
Right. More recently, I kind of hung my hat as a brand consultant. One of your previous guests kind of told me, Jeff, you're a consultant. You need to, you know, wear that hat. And so a lot of the peers that I've, you know, been around in the last year or two have expressed, you know, their frustration with, you know, I'm so great. How come the world doesn't know it?
Sure.
So I've managed to, you know, put together a nice I have to get down to a price point for solos, you know, that, so I've really had to streamline and make my process efficient. And I've worked with a number of different solo consultants to help, you know, their own personal branding. A lot of them have a vision for, you know, going beyond just a consulting offer to, you know, something that really is, could become a business or, you know, intellectual property.
Sure. And let's dive into that, because we talked a little bit about that before we came on the air, about company branding and personal branding and how those things intersect. Give us your thoughts on that.
There's not a whole lot of difference, you know, because, you know, I've realized recently that, you know, we know that corporations are incorporated there, you know, which means, you know, it's made flesh, or, you know,
right.
Corporation.
Right.
You know, but really it's just people, right? Any company is, it may have a product and a technology, a building, but really it's all about the people, right? So it's a bunch of personal brands unified under one brand idea and culture. So personal branding really is the same fundamental process. And there's not a whole lot of difference. It's just, smaller and, you know, and attached to one real person, but, it's fundamentally, it's the same thing.
Sure. Sure. You must be a former Latin student. I think I heard some Latin in there in corpus, right? So, yeah, very nice. I like that. Takeaways. Are there any particular takeaways that folks ought to think about as they look at their own branding and maybe think about whether to engage someone like you?
Yeah, I think the key takeaway, and I have top of mind from conversations and experiences with customers and clients and colleagues and friends, is keep it simple. Bite-size your branding. You know, don't feel like you know, if you're tending to, you know, how you're perceived out there in the world, don't think you have to solve all the gaps or the, you know, how it's missing at once. It's bite-size it, you know. A lot of clients we work with now, we've been, you know, kind of doing on-the-fly rebranding. You know, we'll create a new website, just the homepage, a homepage website. And I think that the way things are moving so fast these days in business, you get a lot of benefit of the doubt. I mean, you don't have to solve it all at once. I've seen some major brands that have either launched. I watched the Salesforce brand launch. I paid keen attention to it. They changed their value proposition, the look and feel of their website a lot over the course of a year or two, just iterating, you know, their value in the marketplace and having their branding authentically and align with that over time. And, you know, one could look at that and say, well, they were kind of unprofessional that they were changing so much. But things move fast now, so the consumer has a forgiveness for everything not being perfect all at once. You know, you want it to be professional, but it doesn't have to be perfect.
And one other question that just comes to mind, because I've got to think that someone listening to you might think, how do I know that my brand needs an overhaul? Because I'm not the expert, right? I'm down with my head down in my business. What are the signs that my brand needs an overhaul, that I need to give you a call?
You know, one of them, it really comes down to sometimes a gut feeling. And that's, a lot of times brand is defined as, you know, the gut feeling people have about you. Well, you have your own gut feeling about your brand. You know, I sometimes ask, you know, as a CEO of a company, are you proud to send people to your website, you know? Or, you know, do you feel proud going there yourself? Does it represent you? So you know it, you know, in your gut.
Sure.
There's a disconnect. And if, you know, if you find that people, you know, in your own networking group, I see this a lot with, you know, B2B clients, you know, you're in the same networking group with someone for 5, maybe 10 years, and ask them a pointed question: what exactly do I do? And they don't have the right answer. Well, you know, there's a problem with how you're telling your story, with your branding.
That makes a lot of sense. Somebody that's heard you week after week or month after month in a networking group, and they can't explain what you do. Mm-hmm. That's pretty rough.
And that's a simple way to, you know, it's so simple. just ask, you know, just ask.
Right.
Ask that pointed question, you know, mm-hmm. Which some folks are, you know, reluctant to do or just don't think of it. But
sure.
It's just a simple question, and you see the outside-in perception of your brand that way.
Great advice from Jeff Armacost, and Jeff is the chief brand guy at WholeBrain. Jeff, this has been great for folks that want more information, would like to be in touch with you, maybe have a consultation on their situation. Tell them how they can be in touch with you.
They can just check us out at WholeBrainBrands.com.
There you go. WholeBrainBrands.com. Jeff Armacost, he's the chief brand guy. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, John.
Folks, just a reminder, you can listen to this show every Tuesday morning live at 11:30. Or if you miss any of our live shows, you can find us on your podcast app of choice. If you can find one we are not on, I'd love to hear from you. I can tell you we are on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Spotify. We're even on YouTube. So check us out on your favorite app. Search for North Fulton Business Radio and you should find us. Also, you can go online to northfultonbusinessradio.com. We've got an archive of going on 180 or so shows, over 400 guests, and great business leaders like James and Jeff we've had over the 3.5, almost 4 years we've done this show. So check us out there. And you can follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, North Fulton BRX on all those platforms. So for my guests, James Daniel and Jeff Armacost, I'm John Ray. Join us next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.
Renaissance Rewards Extra is the checking account that checks all the boxes. Roadside assistance? Check. Cell phone insurance? Check. More than 400,000 local shopping discounts. Check. Up to $25 per month in ATM refunds and a great rate? Check. All in an easy-to-use mobile app. To open an account or find out more about Renaissance Rewards Extra Checking, go to renaissancebank.com or visit us at any of our more than 190 locations throughout the South. Renaissance Bank. Understanding you. Member FDIC. Equal Housing Lender.